The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the Repack. I'm Justin Mosqueda, and I'm joined here by Evan Tex Western. Say what's up to the people, Tex.
My friend, they did it. They got the one seed. This is real. It happened.
The playoffs run through Lambeau.
We willed it into existence.
We made it happen. No losses in Lambeau the entire year. Now we get a home crowd for every game. I can't remember. It feels like I just completely lost sense of time. What were the playoffs like? They had fans in the stands, but it wasn't filled, right?
Yeah, I think that was still last year in those games. They had the small sections of like local first responders and people, a couple thousand fans in each of those two games, but it was obviously nowhere near full. So to have, you know, it'll be the first full playoff game since Seattle 2 years ago in the divisional round.
And they talk about that the whole time. I mean, I don't know if that's been like an internal narrative for this Packers team, but everyone who was up on the presser today was talking about, we get, fans in the stands for these playoff games. So that seemingly, is going to be a big factor compared to last year.
Yeah, I think Rodgers even mentioned, too, that he's hoping that they get some true Wisconsin Lambeau January weather, too, because last year in the conference championship, it was not a cold, chilly Lambeau game. And I certainly think that probably did help Tampa a little bit, that it wasn't traditional playoff Lambeau weather.
Yeah, I think you would think, a team in, Tampa, Dallas, Phoenix, and Los Angeles, you end up playing in the cold.
Get
a night game, exposed to the environment, all of that. That seems like it would help out them.
Make them tackle AJ Dillon in the cold, the snow, and just break their will to live.
This game was very odd from the jump. By the way, the Green Bay Packers won. They smashed the Minnesota Vikings. I don't even know the score because the score doesn't really matter. Sean Mannion played, and then Kellen Mond played for three plays, and then Sean Mannion played again. That didn't really make sense to me. Zimmer, after the game, they asked him about Kellen Mond, who's, their rookie quarterback. Zimmer was asked, do you want to see him play next week? And he said, not particularly. And they asked him why. He says, I see him every day. Boom, not roasted.
Not a stirring review for your third round pick.
No, I mean, he's getting bullied a whole lot more than Love did when Boyle was over him on the depth chart last year. There was an umpire that went out in this game very early on, got checked into the blue tent. I was scrambling to figure out like what that means. I'm like, what is the umpire? I know the umpire is the guy who throws holding flags. Basically. I knew that. It's more so like in college where they're like right over the ball too. At the NFL level, the umpires are behind and to the left of the quarterback, basically in the backfield. So they watch like holding for center, left guard, left tackle, and then tight end or whatever's out there. So one would think that like maybe they would be able to get away with a couple more holding calls or something like that, but I didn't really notice anything out of the ordinary in this game. I don't think that extra ref going down really made a big difference.
No, there was nothing egregious. I think there were more missed holds in the Cleveland game than there were in this one, especially on that Cleveland offensive line.
Quickly, I guess let's go over who was kind of in, who's out in this game. Jair Alexander got placed on the reserve COVID list right before game time. It was like after they had already dropped the inactives, I believe.
Yeah, it was like 10 minutes later after they had already ruled him out. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, that was odd. There was a Darius Smith report by, I can't remember who it was. It was from NFL Network, though.
Garofalo, I think.
Yeah, that's who it was, who said basically, you know, Za'Darius Smith is in the building. There was apparently, based off of what Garofalo was saying, like some weird, like COVID protocol stuff going on with Za'Darius, because at the time he was unvaccinated. And every time you like leave the facility to go back somewhere else, there is then like a time frame that you have to like be isolated once you return back to the facility. So like bouncing in and out of the building wasn't helping Za'Darius's case at any point.
Yep.
I guess Za'Darius is now vaccinated, but he was on the sideline with a mask. So I don't know. It's hard.
What I'm thinking is that maybe he's in that like that 4-week window after you get your second dose where like unvaccinated protocols still apply, but then once that time runs out, then he's good to go. That's kind of where I'm thinking, especially with Garofalo saying that he fairly recently finished getting vaccinated. So we'll see. Hopefully the next couple of weeks he'll be clearly clear out of that protocol, and he'll be good to go, you know, if his back allows.
There was no like big injury that really held anyone out other than, you know, Bach and Billy Turner still aren't on the field. Tyler Lancaster was the only guy who was listed as anything other than out on the injury report, and he ended up playing. He was questionable for that back injury. Kingsley Keke did not get cleared off of the COVID reserve list. So I would assume Lancaster ate a ton of those snaps. I'm assuming Lancaster, despite that back injury, was still just way up there in terms of, you know, career or season highs for snap counts.
Seemed like I saw him a lot, and there were a couple of times where he flashed a little bit, penetrating in the run game. I saw TJ Slayton on the field, I think, on the very first defensive series too. So it'll be interesting to see tomorrow morning when those snap counts come out where those two guys shook out.
The Packers, very slow start to this game, so, shockingly, right?
Yeah.
Domofsky tweeted out, they've been outscored by 36 points in the first quarter entering tonight. Fifth worst in the NFL. I think they had, what was it, 3 trips into the red zone, and yep, they came away with 6 points in the first 3 drives, which included like a weird bobbled snap by Bohorquez. Bohorquez had a tough night between the bobbled snap and the shanked punt.
Yeah, that was ugly.
Yeah. He, what a wild ride of a putter, right? you think like this guy just goes back and then he just boots the hell out of the ball. And it's like, well, sometimes you get like a 10% chance he's going to shank it. And then like every other like PAT or field goal, there's just something weird with the operation.
The highs and the lows are it's quite the roller coaster ride with him. And yeah, I think his one went 22. He only punted twice in this game, and his other one was like 39 yards, but that was, you know, that was with the Packers at the plus 40 and ended up going into the end zone. So certainly not a good day for his net. And I had initially thought, watching it live, that was a bad snap on that first field goal. No, it was it got him, and he just straight dropped it. And kudos to Crosby for putting a little hitch in his step and his approach and being able to slow himself down enough. And it's a good thing that was only about a 35 yard field goal, because otherwise, you know, you pushing that past 40, that really messes with you. So thankfully it was a little bit of a chip shot for him.
Yeah, I mean, that was like all ankle strength from Mason. I mean, I don't even know if he could get his leg into that thing. It was a weird shot too, because they did, you know, the like Madden angle basically, where it's like behind the kicker for it, and it was such a wide angle that in real time you couldn't really tell what was happening other than like, wow, that took a long time for it to get off of Mason's foot, you know. So I had to like slow it down on my damn YouTube TV. I got it down to 0.25 speed so I could take a little clip of it and put it up on Twitter. But he clearly like, he catches it, he puts it on its side, and then he's like, oh crap, it's happening. And then like just scampers to get it out. But he got the laces out. So thankfully, I mean, more hazard pay, I guess, for him. Yeah. But like, that's never what you want to see, ever really what you want to see. The ball also came out a little weird. Like it didn't come out straight. It was like fluttering. It looked like a duck, you know? Like,
okay, so maybe there was a little bit on Wordle for the snap then.
There were a lot of weird things early on in the game where I think like people were like, oh, this is what a ball feels like in like -5 degrees or whatever it was.
When you figure Bohorquez has done this before, right? I mean, he mm-hmm. punted in Buffalo the last couple of years. So it would surprise me that he would be that surprised by it. Wirtle, who, you know, I think he was in what, LA earlier this year, the right. Packers got him off of. I don't know where he's been before then. So maybe there's a little bit of that with him. But yeah, I was surprised that Bohorquez seemed to struggle as much as he did given the conditions.
Bohorquez Wirtle played college at Iowa State. He was on the Lions practice squad week 1 through 17. So if he's not on the road, they have indoor practice facility, I think, the Lions.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much weather he's really getting. After the game, they all talked about, you know, are they gonna play this next week? I think us in the APC chat it assumed like you're not playing these guys. Like this is kind of weird because the LaFleur tree from like a sports science standpoint, I would say definitely branches off of like what the Rams have done. And the Rams were really aggressive in terms of like, if we have nothing to play for right now, like we just aren't going to start a guy. Like that's how Sean Mannion got his first start in the NFL was, you know, off of the bench, you know, week 17 or whatever it was for the Rams. So between that, between like how many like veteran rest days they give guys, they seem to be very cognizant of like the wear and tear of an NFL season. I would have just assumed that like week 18, you're not going to play guys if you already have the one seed locked up. But Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams both said in the postgame presser that they wanted to play at least a little bit. And then LaFleur said, quote, "My gut says these guys are going to play a little bit," unquote. So I would think that they're probably going to give Davante a shot to get the season long record for receiving yards. But
yeah,
as soon as he breaks that record, like pull everyone, man, like get him absolutely. The record and get the hell out of there.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. There's no, I know Roger said that his toe felt good today. He didn't have to, you know, have it shot up or anything again. It sounded like he was pretty optimistic about with a couple weeks off it being almost 100% by the divisional round. So with that in mind, I don't know why you wouldn't just let him rest next week. But yeah, it sounded like he wanted to go out there and the LaFleur was prepared to play his starters for at least a little bit in that game. So fingers crossed that the Detroit doesn't, you know, have any issues, because trying to think back, where was Detroit where Rodgers got concussed in 2010? I think it was on that Thanksgiving game that Flynn had to come in and they got taken to the woodshed in that one. So now I will feel much more comfortable next Sunday afternoon when we finally see Jordan Love take the field.
Yeah, as soon as Rodgers takes one hit, I mean, Twitter is just going to be ablaze saying, like, why did we do this? Why did we expose ourselves? We literally gained nothing from this. I understand the, like, 2 weeks rest thing, but, like, they've just played 16 games.
He doesn't need those reps. He doesn't need the practice.
He doesn't practice. He doesn't
need the game reps. Yeah, what do we – There's no reason for this, and I am not worried about rust whatsoever. I mean, this team starts slow in the first quarter anyway, so okay, fine. They do it again, and they just come, you know, break the doors down in the second quarter, and you know, put up 30 points. Fine, whatever, that's fine.
My bigger worry, if I were the coaching staff, is like, where are we pulling these players off of the bench from? Because there's so many guys who, I mean, I guess the COVID reserve list now is very small. I think there's only two guys on it, right? It's Kingsley Key, or I guess three now with Jair. Kingsley Kiki, Jair Alexander, and Amari Rodgers are the last guys who are on it. But I mean, we were at a point where there was like, what, like 12 dudes, I think, on the list?
Earlier this week. Yeah. I think even like what Wednesday, when they put another five or six guys on there, we were up to, 12, 13, 14 guys, I think, between the active roster guys and the injury reserve guys.
And you think about what you get 46 plus two call ups from the practice squad, not including whoever you move up, right? For COVID reasons. That's not that many bodies if you're going to bench the entire starters after one half a play or something like that, or one quarter even, you know? Like, what are you going to – you're going to make TJ Slayton play every single down at defensive? Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, get someone else out there. But I don't know. Maybe it is a numbers issue in terms of bringing guys up. Just overall thoughts on this game. Do you have anything else before we get into vibe checks?
No, I think it was weird again, the red zone performance. You mentioned it earlier, 0-for-3 in that first quarter, going for it on the 4th-and-3 on the second drive, I think. And it looked like they were you know, I think he went to Adams in the corner of the end zone on that fourth down and looked like maybe he had a little bit of hand fighting between him and Mackenzie Alexander. But I think that's still the thing on offense that you really would love to see them clean up, is to get that consistently back, you know, 50-60%, especially considering they were so damn good at it last year. I mean, they basically set a league record for, you know, touchdown rate conversion rate in the red zone. So that's the one, you know, we'll get into the vibe checks, but that's the one area where I think I'm most concerned on offense.
How many weeks has it gone since we've seen that, like the touchdown he had, Devontae Adams had against like the Rams, right? How many weeks has it gone since we've seen like that level of creativity near the goal line? You know, I mean, they punched a couple in. AJ Dillon got two rushing touchdowns. That was nice to see, because, you know, he's an inside runner. But we haven't seen like the tricky dicky stuff that, you know, they've kind of been known for.
Yep. Yeah. I feel like there was maybe one in that Ravens game, to Adams. They got him loose on a little bit, but yeah, it really just doesn't feel like it's been there the last couple of weeks. So that would be something that I would hope that the coaching staff would do a little self-scouting these next 2 weeks and, you know, try to draw up some more fun stuff for getting close to the goal line.
Yeah. Hopefully they're just holding it for the playoffs. All right. We'll take it to break and then we'll come back with the vibe checks.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And we're back. All right, so the first thing that I noticed offensively, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is playing. He is not starting on the field. Equanimeous St. Brown was out there. That first drive was very weird. I think they had rotated in like Winfrey in. Like there was at one point where like Equanimeous St. Brown's Marquez Valdes-Scantling's second snap came on Juwan Winfrey's first snap, which is like, okay, what are we doing here? I don't understand why they were switching in so many guys at the beginning of the game, other than like maybe causing like trying to sink in doubt that like MVS wasn't healthy, but then he ended up playing for most of the game. So it was very odd to me.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I did notice they started, I think the first snap came in 12 with DeGuara and Mercedes on the field. But yeah, it did seem like a little bit of a weird substitution pattern those first drive or two.
And they do that sometimes, but it's not usually like the first drive. Like a lot of times, I think we've talked about this before, like they use Tyler Davis on like drive starters just to like use his legs up a little bit and then let someone else play. But I didn't get that with the MVS thing. I mean, one of their first plays was like a shot to Devontae again, which is, I love it. I love the just early first drive. Just, we're going to take one shot to Devontae at least.
Yep.
It's like, okay, that works.
Yeah, Rodgers was funny talking about it too, that he apologized to Tom Clements because, you know, the old quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, hit one of his three rules and major don'ts was don't ever have a predetermined read. And Rodgers even joked that he's like, I want to take a shot to Devontae on this first series. So kind of going against his old QB guru's advice, but obviously it worked. I mean, he had two of them on that drive to Tay that really opened it up right off the bat. So, I mean, it was great to see those guys in sync early. I don't think we had really any major misfires from Rodgers when he was targeting Adams, and we certainly didn't get any drops from Adams in this game. So it was nice to see those guys fully back on the same page and clicking again today.
Yeah. Devontae got 14 targets, 11 receptions, 136 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he was just eating all day, to the point where like, you started wondering in that first half, because I think he had 100 yards in the first half. So most of the yardage came, you know, early in the game, where you're like, Zimmer's played against these guys. It's not even like a have you watched film. It's like you played against these guys. Why are you just like singling up Adams? Why aren't you rotating everything to him like, you know, everyone else has this season?
Well, and I couldn't believe it that they had him on that first drive one-on-one coverage against Chris Boyd, literally a cornerback I had never heard of.
Yeah.
That seems like a recipe for disaster.
Not good. Not good. DeGuara dropped a touchdown early on in the game. That was one of the failed drives. I thought he was going to get ripped at, but they cut away, so we never got to see if Rodgers was actually yelling at him or not. Was not good, though. He made a couple plays after that, but not a good sign for a tight end one as it stands right now.
Yeah, the whole Rodgers DeGuara thing has become a bit of a meme, and it still makes me laugh every time he does something that's slightly disappointing or significantly disappointing, like that drop in the end zone. The whole AP Silly Slack just explodes with, oh, nope, DeGuara is going to get it again after this play when he gets back to the huddle. So it's that has become one of my favorite stupid things during the game lately, these last, you know, several weeks and months.
And Mercedes didn't get a target.
Yeah.
Dominic Daphne got one target, couldn't come up with it. Tyler Davis actually led the team in receptions at the tight end position with two, because DeGuara also had two, and they combined for 20 yards. So they got 20 yards of production out of tight ends. It was more of a run game. I mean, obviously they had 32 carries, 174 yards on the ground and two touchdowns. You love to see that.
Yep.
But they're going to have to get production out of these tight ends at some point on third down. Cause if not, you're playing 10 on 11 football with a back probably in protection the way that, you know, Aaron Rodgers likes to play. So that's the bigger concern for me.
Yeah, the one interesting thing that I spotted was they used Tyler Davis for the first time on that play action split zone look on that DeGuara play where he leaks out across the formation. They finally did that for Tyler Davis for the first time. I think he picked up like 8 or 9 yards and a first down on that play. So if they're kind of using him in that way, maybe they do have a little bit of that, you know, that depth of skill sets more so than we've been thinking that they've had all season. Is if they're running the same types of plays between him and DeGuara and even Daphne a little bit, you know, maybe those three guys are kind of rotating through similar positions and you can use them a little bit more interchangeably moving forward.
And that's the thing we've always said about Tyler Davis, is not necessarily like a value judgment on like if this guy can play, because it's important to do that on an individual level, even relative to like what a guy came in terms of like expectation, right? So like Russell Douglas comes off of a practice squad. He's a Pro Bowl alternate right now. So you can't judge guys off of that. So you want to judge Tyler Davis off of what he does on the field. The problem is he hasn't been on the field very often for Green Bay, which isn't surprising for a practice squad tight end who came in and was like the fifth tight end when everyone was healthy. And then he didn't have very much production either, you know, in the NFL preseason or at the college level because of the offenses that he was in and just kind of the situations he was at. So we're like learning about Tyler Davis as the NFL is learning about Tyler Davis kind of at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. Learning about not just, you know, what he can bring to this offense, but where he fits in the offense, you know, which of those tight end roles that, you know, the Packers have that they've had multiple different guys playing those different roles all season long. You know, if he can, the more of those roles that he can play, the more snaps he's going to see. And I think the more targets he's going to end up with the next, you know, couple of weeks and hopefully into February.
They had that 3rd-and-1 run out of the gun. It was just a basic inside zone and Newman just AFK'd. He just AFK'd, just let the guy in the backfield. Who was it? Dennis Kelly was like asked to block two guys basically, or it might've been the center.
I think it was Patrick. Remember. Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of the two was basically how to block two guys in short yardage. And that in the gun, like I understand you want to like have a constraint and be like, we could still run out of the gun with AJ Dillon. You have to respect it on 3rd-and-1, but like, goodness gracious, the quality control coach who said we have to have more runs in this situation out of the gun, give him a different job for a week.
My first thought when they lined up in the gun was, please don't run it out of the gun. Like it's AJ Dillon. Just go under
or at
center.
Least don't run it at Newman's side.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the very least. Run behind Runyon.
Yeah.
His name has run in it.
Oh, and Runyon was a beast today. I mean, he was paving the way big time for Dillon, especially on those inside runs. At least one of the touchdowns, he had just a damn near pancake. I'm very pleased that he's a guy I planted my flag on him on draft day. Leading up to draft day, I mean, Peter Bukowski and I were both big on him just based on the measurables. He fit all of those, you know, Packers offensive line targets, and it's nice to see him really coming into his own over the second half of the season.
Runyon is doing good enough that it wouldn't surprise me, and this is 2022 talk now, but you know, if the team is in a position where they have to let guys like Billy Turner go to keep Aaron Rodgers, to keep Devontae Adams, to get Jair Alexander on another contract, right? It wouldn't surprise me if a guy like Runyon was able to play like right tackle or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, he's doing well enough that I think at least warrants, you know, some sort of competition where you're like, well, we have Runyon and Jenkins, and there's no reason why both of these guys, like one of these guys, should be on the bench. Like,
right.
Let's find a right tackle. Let's find a guard. These two can play football. You know,
agreed. Yeah, I think in my mind, the more likely scenario is probably Jenkins kicks out to right tackle, and you keep Runyon at left guard. But yeah, both of those two guys are absolutely among the, you know, three or four best offensive linemen when this team is at full health, and they both need to be on the field.
Is Alan Lazard wide receiver two now?
Yep.
I think he might be, and he warrants it. I mean, he's doing enough. Like, he's running these crossers over the middle of the field, and he's outrunning safeties to the spot, and he's making tough catches in tight windows. So you can say he's not fast. He's fast enough to run past the safety, and that's what they're asking him to do right now.
Yeah, and if you can do that and also be the blocker he is in the run game, what more can you ask from a receiver in this offense, in this LaFleur scheme? He's now up to, I think it's four games – three out of four with a touchdown. He had a three-game touchdown streak earlier in the season too that caught me off guard. I was looking back at his stats, but he's had four, five, six targets, you know, basically every one of the last five or six games. And you know, it's clear that Rodgers trusts him. They talked about that on the broadcast tonight a little bit, going back to that first touchdown he had against Detroit 2 years ago on that Monday night game, and how that really kind of established that trust with him. So you know, he's getting the wide receiver two snaps. He's the guy that's going to be out there when they're in 12 personnel, to be a blocker when they do go with a run game. And so, he's been fun to watch. I'm happy for him. And, it's, you know, it's really a boon to this offense to have a guy who can do all the dirty work that he does and still be a legitimate threat in the passing game.
Do you think Rodgers has clinched the MVP? Does he have to do anything? I looked it up, and I think after the game, he's like minus 250, which means, you know, if you're a betting man, like, you're still making money if you're putting money on Rodgers at this point. I don't know how much money you can actually get down on some of these prop bets, but seems like the betting market at least thinks there's a chance Rodgers can lose it. But I just can't imagine, like, unless Burrow breaks the passing record next week, like, what else? Who else is even in contention at this point? Because it's not Brady. He almost lost to the Jets.
Yeah, Brady's long gone. And I mean, even 2 weeks ago, I thought that, you know, before Brady had his awful game against the Saints, I had thought that it was, you know, whichever team wins the one seed in the NFC, that quarterback's going to get it. They're not going to give it to Jonathan Taylor, especially with the Colts randomly losing to the Raiders today. I don't know that there's another really viable candidate based on
the other candidate, would have been like Devontae.
I guess
Devontae would have been my offensive player of the year vote. Like, he's more I know the Cooper Kupp stats, all that stuff. Look, Devontae, I wouldn't trade him for anyone. I would not trade him for anyone.
No.
Not a quarterback, then it's Devontae, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the value that those two bring together is just unreal. And so let's get those vibes going for bringing back 12 and 17 next year too, while we're at it.
We got to. The way that I figured it, we don't, if you're a Packers fan, you don't want to hear about the franchise tag at all. The franchise tag is bad. It's a bad idea. The franchise tag, all it's going to do is give you an overinflated cap hit in 2022. They need to get done a long-term deal with Devontae, where that cap hit, even if he's getting more money in his bank account immediately, that cap hit is smaller in 2022 so that they can start retaining guys. And then the cap is going to balloon until 2023. And then the new TV money is going to spill in from there. So
exactly. I feel like we talked about this a little bit mid season, but the way you keep him and make it work under the cap is sign him to a big deal with a big old signing bonus. So he gets a crap load of money in year one, and you can spread it out over 5 years or something. And then you you know, load a bunch of it in a roster bonus or sign or base salary in 23 and then turn that into a signing bonus and then keep spreading it out once the cap balloons in 23 and beyond. That's the way you got to do it. That's the only way I think that you can keep him, you know, realistically with the cap constraints that the Packers have, because if you put the franchise tag on him, you have to account for that $20 million of cap space
immediately,
the instant you sign him to that tag. And the Packers are going to be, I'm not saying it's impossible. There's, you know, there's all those cap machinations that you can do with the void years and stuff now to shuffle money around, but in order to keep him and use $20 million of cap space on him next year, you are sacrificing a lot. You're probably cutting Billy Turner among other, you know, big name players that have
put a ton of those defensive big guys. Campbell not coming back. Rasul not coming back. Lowry, Preston.
You're cutting Lowry. You're probably getting rid of Preston. Like
the Darius. Like there's a lot of decisions to be made in that.
So
situation.
you can manage it if you can find a way to work out a long term deal with him. But you're going to have a really tough time fielding a competitive team top to bottom next year if you put a franchise tag on him.
So this is a stat from Next Gen Stats. 10 of the 14 carries today for Dylan were inside the tackle box, so inside run. For the season, he's at 72%, which is top in the league in terms of the highest percentage. And he has the second best time to line of scrimmage, which basically means like he is just sprinting to that line. All of those check out to me. Like guy who gets to the line fast, he's running inside. It's just downhill run game, baby. That's all it is.
Well, that's where those yards after contact come into play, right? Like he might not be picking the best hole every time on a carry by carry
basis. Because his head is down because they need three.
Right. Yeah, but he's plowing 250 pounds of man meat into that line and into the linebackers and getting 6, 7, 8 yards of carry damn near every time.
Collinsworth fun to loves watch. Him.
Oh yeah.
Collinsworth is in love. He's like, ah, this guy. This guy. He's a grounded pound. The outside and the inside guy. He loves it.
Yep.
Do we want to talk about Jordan Love? He made a couple of passes. He actually had a higher QBR in this game than Aaron Rodgers, if you believe it, on 4 pass attempts. I mean, 2 of 4, 19 yards. Definitely some accuracy issues on one of them. One of the incompletions, it was wide open. He missed it, but I don't know. They weren't asking him to do the deep shot stuff. Minnesota wasn't really pressuring him because they were also playing backups at that point too.
Yep.
So it wasn't anything like the Kansas City Chiefs stuff, which is what I think teams would run if you know they were trying to win a ball game against Jordan Love. So I really don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, that's the other reason to keep Rodgers reps at a minimum next week when it's a game that doesn't matter, because then you get another, you know, 3-4 quarters of game tape on Jordan Love against, you know, a semi-real NFL defense. Oh, apologies to the Lions, but get as much tape as you can. And I certainly, you know, imagine that the coaching staff has loved getting, you know, all these reps for him with the first teamers in practice with Rodgers being out during the week with the toe thing. I mean, that's all got to be really valuable reps for him as well. But yeah, translate it to the field, give him, you know, 3-4 quarters of work on Sunday in a game that really doesn't matter for anything beyond just tape evaluation.
It's like gambling, television contracts, and like the very few people who play like fantasy through like week 18.
Yep.
That's the only reason this game is being played.
And if you have a fantasy league that still plays your championship in week 18, like get your shit together. Come on.
You're psycho. So someone has Davante Adams and he's going to get 50 yards. And it doesn't make sense. You've had him.
Fix your shit, guys.
Yeah. Vibe checks offensively. I'll go like 9 out of 10. I mean, they got, 8. The red zone stuff really worries me. I changed my mind. They put up 37, which, you know, usually you take it. But MVP quarterback, you failed in the red zone 3 times in a row to start the game. Yep. That's got to be at least 2 points.
3 for 7 in the red zone is the only problem. But again, they ran the ball down their throats in the second half. Dylan was a beast. 8 out of 10.
Someone asked me today if the Jones contract was a mistake. And I think in the grand scheme of things, the value add of Jones on his deal versus the value add of being able to like retain a Rasul for like $5 million or something like that, or a Campbell for probably pretty cheap, honestly, or even, you know, being able to get away with a few fewer cap mechanics to retain, you know, Rodgers or Devontae or Jair, probably. But like, Jones is still pretty good, and he's a pretty unique talent. And I think if Dylan was the full time back, you would still need someone who threatens you on the edge. So there's still, yep, there's still like an open role on the roster if Jones goes. It's not like, this is very much a committee backfield. It's not a backfield, yep, that is made by one guy, and they both complement each other. So to a certain extent, I get it, but like, the milk spilt. So like, what are you going to do now?
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually looking at the cap and things today for 22 when the news broke about the Packers considering using the tag on Devontae, and trying to look back at that Jones contract and how it's structured the next couple of years. I mean, he's only on a $4 million cap hit this year. That's dirt cheap, but then it starts to catch up next year a little bit. It's up to $9 million. And then in 23, when again, we expect the cap to grow like crazy, I think it's up to like 12 or 14, something like that. So next year is the tough season to swallow, I think, given that the cap is staying pretty flat. And again, you gotta bring those guys back. I would not be surprised at all to see them do a little bit of the same thing that they did this year, is shift that to a roster bonus, spread as much as they can out into 23 and 24 again, and then revisit it after next year with, you know, with whether or not they can keep him for 23. But yeah, the contributions that he brings, I mean, those complementary styles, they really worked well together, especially in this game. I mean, Jones had those two big runs for, I think, 27 and 29 yards. I think I read somewhere too, it was the first game in his career that he's had multiple carries of 25 yards in the same game. He's broken off so many of those big ones.
He's so slippery. Right?
Yeah. He's broken off so many big touchdowns over the years, but yeah, I think that was what I saw, that he'd never had multiple 25 yard carries in the same game. And both of them are so good out of the backfield as receivers. I think that's so, you know, we certainly don't underrate it as Packers fans, but it's such a value add to this offense to have both of those guys that you can run, and they're great in blitz pickup too, right? Literally, yep, every phase of the game that you don't have to change your playbook for either of those guys in the passing game at all, which is great.
And I think, again, Patrick Taylor isn't getting a lot of snaps, but that's something that Patrick Taylor can do. And
yeah,
the fact that they sat on him,
he looked good a little bit in his late game action today too.
Right, he doesn't get the reps is the thing, but you know, they sat on that guy who had an injury coming out of college, and they knew like, this guy is talented, as you know, he should have been a draft pick, but because of injury, he's going to sit on a practice squad until December of his rookie year. So, or not even be able to practice on the practice squad until December of his rookie year. So shouts to the front office. Once again, I think the front office has definitely come big. We're full blown. Like,
oh yeah,
I believe in Gutekunst. I believe in, you know, Russ Ball. Like, Just keep it going. Don't let him walk out of the door.
100%. And if they can find a way to get Rasul and or Devondre back, even getting one of those two guys back for next year would be huge, I think.
Huge. Defensively, speaking of corners, Kevin King, he's in at dime. He is
full-blown,
replace Henry Black and dime looks. That was something that they started doing against the Baltimore Ravens. Then obviously against Cleveland, Kevin King got put into the reserve COVID list like right before game time too. So we don't know what their game plan was going into that one, but this was kind of like the moment where it was like, all right, are they going to do the King stuff again like they did against Baltimore? Or was that something that they ran specifically for Baltimore? Or is Henry Black going to come back in and be the dime guy? And it was King in. And I think King did a pretty good job. They have him matching up a lot of times with like guys out of the backfield. They actually put Campbell on the tight end. I know most people would think like, hey, you put the corner on the tight end, you put the linebacker on the running back. They did it the other way around. And King was doing a pretty good job of getting guys out of the backfield. He popped Mannion on like that third down scramble.
Yeah.
Where he was just waiting at the sticks. And he's like, nope, this is the wall. The wall gets set right here and I'm going to hit you.
Yeah. I wonder if that was a little bit of a matchup thing because of the limitations that Tyler Conklin has. Like, he's not a Travis Kelce type. He's not that, you know, receiver playing a tight end position type like a Zach Ertz or one of those guys. I wonder if you know, if the Packers run into those guys in the playoffs, if that's flipped a little bit and they have King on the tight end instead and Devondre on the running back. And especially again, Dalvin Cook's a great receiver out of the backfield as well. So I do wonder if some of that was a little matchup based, but yeah, I think King is the dime back is probably here to stay at least until Jair comes back. And then, you know, knock on wood that he makes it back. Whether that's potentially next week, if he gets cleared from COVID and, you know, is ready to go, or if that's divisional round, gotta be great to have him back though.
It would be interesting to see who they put in the slot. Cause you would think King is a guy who's always played outside. He basically has never played in the slot, and he's a big body guy who often turns guys loose. And I guess it helps him in the middle of the field, cause if you turn a guy loose, there's usually a safety over top of you. But he's always a guy that I thought, because of his length and stuff, like you want him using the sideline as an extra defender, right? Kind of like, you know, Richard Sherman and those guys do. But I guess if you're moving away from that cover three where you're thinking about, you know, zones and using the sideline as a defender like that, maybe you do want him in the slot and matching up against bigger guys. And if Jair can come back and it's Jair and Kevin King in the slot with Rasul Douglas and Eric Stokes outside, like that is a pretty damn good dime package. That damn is right. Pretty damn good.
Jeez. That'll work.
That's tough to pass on. The tight ends, as it stands right now, Philadelphia is the 7th seed. San Francisco is the 6th seed. Arizona is the 5. Dallas is the 4. Tampa is the 3. LA is the 2. I know the Rams and Cowboys do throw the tight ends, but in terms of like individual talents, they don't really have the guys who like worry you like that. It's really Gronk for Tampa, Ertz for Arizona, Kittle for San Francisco, and then Goddard for Philadelphia, who – I don't play redraft fantasy, so I don't know how good Goddard's been doing this year, but like that there's a reason why they were able to trade Ertz. Like Goddard's very good. He's an actual tight end that puts his hand in the dirt. He run blocks and he can get after in the passing game. That guy is like a full blown tight end.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's had a really nice season. I'm looking it up real quick. Yeah, he's over 750 receiving yards this season. At 15,
and he was splitting time with Ertz for until the deadline.
The like first month and a half of the season or so. So, he's got 200 yard games in the last month too. So, yeah, he's a major weapon in that offense. So, and doing that from the conventional, you know, online tight end position is, you know, something not a lot of these guys are doing.
The defense looked to me like they were just sitting in too high all game, and they were like, look. You can try to run it at us, but what you're not going to do is play action us. Like we're not going to give up the play action shot. Justin Jefferson had a couple plays, that scoring drive where they got the field goal. He made some plays, but like he was kind of absent, you know, it wasn't like that first Vikings matchup where Jefferson, Thielen and Cook put up like 360 yards or something like that against this Packers team.
Well, they only had one completion longer than 25 yards in the game. And the only other one longer than 20 yards was that ridiculous play to
the guard,
Garrett Bradbury, after Adrian Amos lights up Tyler Conklin over the middle. That was one of their two passing plays over 20 yards in this game.
That was ridiculous. Adrian Amos, that was a clean hit.
Yep.
That was very painful. That hurt the guy a lot. That was the one where, like, you look around, you're like, was that a flag? Because we're all conditioned now to, like, hard hit equals flag. And then they slowed it down. You're like, nope. He went through that guy's sternum. He went through that guy's sternum, and the ball bounced up, and it landed in the offensive lineman's hand.
It reminded me of that Henry Black fumble last year against the Houston game, like, right at the end of that game. Just that, it goes flying 12 feet in the air. For Bradbury to – I mean, he picked it off the turf too. Like that was almost
he's an athlete. Ground. Yeah, he's all he the is. Like RES, like the mock draftable spider web stuff. He's a freak athlete. Yeah, it was funny too because he wanted it. He realized that was his sports movie moment, and the four DBs around him did not realize his mentality was like that.
Yep.
They converge on him. Two of them are wrapping him up, and then one of them pulls off. He is like head down. Like I am still going. I'm getting every yard out of this. And then you see the other three DBs who are not engaged with him realizing slowly like, oh shit, we got to get this guy on the ground. Like, this guy wants this.
It reminded me of the Dan Connolly moment in the Patriots game.
Yep.
In 2010, So hopefully that's a good omen.
It seemed to me like they were playing more games with the linebackers. I thought that that would come from Burks. It did not come from Burks. It looked like they were dropping down Barnes and Campbell to the line of scrimmage a whole lot more than they usually do. That's something that I'm probably going to do a study in the run game this upcoming week, because let's be real. Are we actually going to preview this Lions game? I don't know how I feel about that, other than, just chase the records, chase whatever records you want and then get out. Dalvin Cook, 12 touches for 13 yards. Woo! This was a different Vikings game than the first time around.
Wow. Man. Yeah. That guy's burned this team, this Packers team, so many times in the past. And to see him set a season low in yardage was shocking. And doing it with, like you said, sitting in too high the whole time. I mean, this defensive line dominated the line of scrimmage for most of this game.
There were so many three and outs too. And that's,
yeah,
that goes back to the point of, is this defensive line, is this defensive front really? Cause we're counting the linebackers too. Are they good against the run or are they not? And it very much comes down to like, well, how fast, how long have they been on the field? You know, how much wear do they have? And getting those, like, I think there was 4 3 and outs in a row. Just getting off of the field, man, saves those guys so much. Like, how often was Tipa out there this week? Not very often, I don't think.
I don't remember seeing him at all until maybe the last drive of the game or the second to last drive when they pulled most of the starters.
Right. And he was playing 15 snaps, and Garvin was playing like 15 snaps, like a game the last couple of weeks, you know? So that's something to be very cognizant about. Mm-hmm. It's not just about, can we stop these guys? What is their yards per attempt or whatever? How many yards per play are they getting? How long have they been on the, how many blows have these guys taken?
Because can you get them off the field quickly?
Right. The depth, there's not that much, you know, beyond the starters at this point with how this roster is structured.
Looking at the snap counts. I mean, I think it's got Minnesota with like 52 offensive plays.
That's not
to the Packers 74. And I mean, Kenny Clark's played more than 60 offensive snaps or defensive snaps on like 4 or 5 different games this year. 52 is under the season average, I think, for both Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary. So to have those guys have that type of workload, to your point, getting off the field quickly, getting a chance to recuperate a little bit and get fresh for the next series has got to be huge for that lack of depth.
What a wild game plan from Minnesota, where you have 11 carries, 27 yards, 14 of them come from Sean Mannion scrambles, and you're not doubling Devontae. So you're not running the ball. You're not doubling Devontae. You're putting it on the shoulders of Sean Mannion to win a shootout with Aaron Rodgers basically throwing on air to Devontae. Like,
I still think that Mike Zimmer is fundamentally a good coach, but the Vikings have to move on from him at this point, right? Like,
the fans seem time, like they're fed right? up. Like, you go into the like replies and stuff to anything the Vikings post, and it's like Zimmer hate 24/7. So,
yeah,
I don't know. Just be worried, man. Be worried about what comes after Zimmer, because Zimmer's a damn good football coach. And it's exactly. not like the Vikings haven't been a laughing stock or anything. I just think that they haven't had the quarterback. So,
yep.
And they made some dumb decisions on the offensive line, certainly.
Yeah. The one other thing on the defense that I want to mention is just, I mean, kind of along that same line, Minnesota went 2 for 12 on third down. This defense got off the field in this game. And it wasn't all just third and longs either. I mean, there were a couple of third and shorts, third and threes, third and fours. That they were able to get some stops, both against the run and in the passing game too. So that's a great sign for this unit.
I was really paying attention to like down and distance and personnel in this game, just because I was like very cognizant of the Kevin King in dime type of thing. And I wanted to kind of touch on that. So they really do draw a line like 2nd and 5 or 3rd and 5. They're going to play their base nickel, whatever it is, however you line up. 3rd and 6, it's like a switch flips, and they're just like, nope, dime time. Dime time. You're going to have to pass. It's funny. Let's go. I'll go. I mean, they basically didn't give up any rushing yards, and they played a backup quarterback. I'll give them 9 out of 10, because we got to give the defense more credit than the offense, right? We have to.
Not the only reason it's a 9 and not a 10 is because they didn't force a turnover, I think, which was a little surprising to me. But no takeaways. But like you said, like 4 straight 3 and outs in the first half. I think they had like 6 total in this game. You can't ask for anything more than that.
Barnes almost had that pick six when Montana he dropped that one.
He was so close. Bad. I know that was a little bit behind him, but yeah, he's gonna dream about that one for a while.
I had forgotten about it. That's probably why Mont got benched after three plays. They were like, "Oh no, I'm done with this."
Oh, that's right. That was a Mont throw. That was on that series, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Special teams. David Moore. He was signed this week after, you know, they worked out the CFL guy. It got all the headlines. Apparently, they didn't like the CFL guy enough because they brought in David Moore, who used to play for the Seahawks, notably. He got a deal with, like, the Panthers. I think he was in with another team this offseason, too. Yeah. But he got, like, a two-year, like, $6 million contract. The Panthers just straight up cut him. He was out there on the street. He got signed on Thursday. Is the starting kick returner and punt returner today. And he did a pretty good job. At the very least, I don't want to see Amari on punts anymore. Amari can return kicks. I don't want to see him on punts, period.
100%. Yeah, it looked so much more comfortable back there. It just kind of looked like he knew what he was doing. And I think he had the longest punt return of the year for this team with a 21 or 22 yarder. I don't want to go full, you know, Tyler Irvin, but this kind of feels like a little bit of a Tyler Irvin moment.
It does. Look,
at least for the special teams, like, I don't know that they're going to do much with him on offense, but no glaring issues from the special teams at all. And on the return game, like, he looked solid. I'll take it.
I liked it. I don't think Amari is a bad kick returner when he's been in there as a kick returner. Mm-hmm. He's fared a whole lot better than him as a punt returner, but like, Moore was fielding balls that like went over his shoulder and stuff. And I'm like, okay, this dude has hand. Like this is what he's built to do. And if it's playoff time, man, we got roles to do. We're done talking about having guys on the bench for development, et cetera. Like, if you're on the team, you got to play. And if Moore can play and he's your best punt returner, do not move away from him until then. LaFleur said after the game, you know, that there's, you know, an open competition everywhere, basically. So he didn't rule out, you know, Amari not being the starter. And that is kind of a different change of tune than he had previously this year, where he's like, that's our guy. And, you know, Murray Straighton says that that's our guy. So that's what we're going to do. Hopefully when Amari comes back, David Moore at the very least is our punt returner.
Yep. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
We touched the Bajorquez bobbled hold already. That wasn't good. The Bajorquez shank. That was also not good. There was that blown call. Yeah. Stokes. He blocked someone into Moore allegedly on the punt return. He gave up with like three steps. Yeah. I don't know that. I think that was a bad call.
I agree. I think that the guy clearly could have avoided running into Moore. I thought it was actually a nifty little move by Moore, because it looked like he broke on the ball late to almost try to draw that contact a little bit. I don't know if I'm sure they didn't factor that in much when they were throwing that call, but they're throwing the flag, but that was iffy at best. And I definitely think that flag shouldn't have been thrown, or should have been thrown, and should have maintained a penalty.
They squibbed it to Equanimeous St. Brown on one of the final kick returns. It was like the same area as that. Who was it? Like Garvin and like Patrick Taylor, was that like the area that they recovered, or they had like that weird exchange where basically they could have caught it like three times and they let it through a couple weeks ago, but they had different players out there. And I don't know if that was them seeing on film, like, oh, if we squib it to this area, maybe they have trouble fielding the ball, but they had different guys in. So I don't know if it was that type of situation or if it was just, we don't want the ball in David Moore's hand after he had that punt return. But hey man, if they're kicking away from David Moore in game one,
dude,
keep him out there.
Absolutely. Keep him out there. 100%. Another, I was just gonna say, another good find. Early returns at least are good on that one. So kudos to Goody once again on, you know, grabbing.
Goody should win executive of the year.
Yes.
And it shouldn't be a debate. Like, I
agreed.
I understand the people who want LaFleur to win coach of the year. I think who is it? Chris and I have differing opinions on this, and that's totally fine. But I just, in general, I think two of the losses can be put on LaFleur's shoulders, between Kansas City, them not adapting fast enough, and New Orleans not adapting fast enough. You can't point to a move that Goop made that hasn't been good outside of the Cobb trade, maybe. And that was general manager Aaron Rodgers who made that.
Even honestly, Cobb has played well when he's been healthy too. I mean, yeah. He's been a third down.
He's just making like $8 million a year.
Yeah. That's the problem. But, there's every one of these moves has worked out. How many of these guys has he pulled off a practice squad or pulled off a street? And you can't say enough about, again, Campbell, Rasul. And if David Moore solidifies the return game a little bit, then that just goes further to bolster his case.
I mean, Dennis Kelly's starting at right tackle right now. Yeah. He was signed off of the street. Nyman was a guy anyone could have signed him at some point when he was on the practice squad. No one mm-hmm. wanted him in Green Bay. Let me think about what they got. I mean, Alan Lazard was a guy who was pulled off of the practice squad in Jacksonville.
Yep.
Tyler Davis is another guy who was just pulled off recently, you know, from the practice squad in Indianapolis. Like he has nailed it. He has
done a great job if Whitney Mercilus hasn't gotten hurt, right?
Yep.
We could be talking about him as another one of these big time, you know, midseason additions. Certainly he would have been a nice boost to that depth on the edge as well. So yeah, it's been a tremendous season for Goody. He deserves all the accolades coming his way, and yeah, fingers crossed that for his sake that executive of the year is in the bag for him.
Absolutely. Special teams vibes, just to tie a bow on this. We're going 7 out of 10. The bobbled hold, I don't like it. Everything else is very good.
Yeah, I'm going 6 only because the shank by Boho knocks it down a little bit. But just to feel like there's a guy competent back there on punts right now, no matter what else happened today. And again, most of the rest of the field goal operation was pretty good aside from the bobbled hold. Six still feels about right. It's not hurting us. And that's about all I can ask for after this season that we've had.
Yeah. The seven might have been just me, just a little too high on the David Moore supply.
Yeah.
Right there.
Oh, and I get it. Believe me. Little recency bias. I can completely see where you're coming from there.
So this week, keep an eye out for, you know, hopefully news on Bakhtiari, Turner, Zadarius, Jair Alexander. I feel like we do this every week. There was no big injuries in this game. Aaron Rodgers says he's healthier than he's ever been. So hopefully from the injury perspective, it's only going up from here and throughout the bye, at least. Anything else to add, Tex?
No, just, man, it feels good to have this locked in with a week to go and to get a little bit of time to hopefully get some of the key players rest up, recuperate a little bit, maybe get Jair back and get him a couple snaps to get him back up to game speed. Should be fun, and you know, we'll see in about 3 weeks for some meaningful football again.
The Packers right now, 538, 27% chance to win the Super Bowl. There's only three teams with 10% or higher.
Oh, boy.
We got to beat the Bucks. We got to beat Tom Brady. Eyes on the prize. All right. Thanks,
go
guys.
Pack, go.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.